This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, we have an elite individual with us today. He's only one of 88 ever in the world. Who are we speaking with today?
Yes, Greg. Muhammad Ali Shukri is joining us today from the Kingdom of Bahrain. He is, of course, the newest accredited speaker for Toastmasters International. In August, Muhammad received the prestigious accredited speaker designation at the 2020 International Convention. Muhammad is a member of Vision Advanced Toastmasters and Y-Access Toastmasters Clubs and Manama. Muhammad's also the CEO and founder of Y-Access Training Solutions and an expert in the field of occupational health and safety management. Mr. Shukri is profiled in the January 2021 issue of the Toastmaster. Muhammad Ali Shukri, welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much, and I'm so happy to be with you, Greg and Ryan.
It's been a pleasure again. Welcome back. Now, Muhammad, we mentioned that you're one of 88, but yet you've also got number of firsts behind you now. You're the first accredited speaker from the Middle East, and of course, the only accredited speaker to have been accredited virtually. Now, first of all, congratulations on those achievements. But interestingly enough, in the article, you mentioned, I'm not a virtual presenter. So I'm curious, and I'm sure everyone else wants to know as well, how did it feel to present virtually, and did the virtual aspect consciously play into your preparation and maybe even your delivery?
Well, we all know that virtually speaking is something that every trainer, speaker, or communicator had to go through and consider from the beginning of the year as this pandemic spread all over the world. Now, whether you were actually doing virtual speaking or not, you had to go through it. For me, I was a physically active speaker, not virtual. So it all started from the beginning, from scratch. I had to do this regardless. But to go through my accredited speaker level two speaking virtually, that was a double challenge. So bringing some highly energetic safety talk to a virtual platform where you don't see the people that used to actually look at you with doubt, that's a good advantage anyway. But also not see the impact that you already do usually on the normal stage. That was a big challenge. And let alone wanting to actually meet all the judging criteria, which actually were crafted for the normal setup. And now you need to do it through the abnormal setup. Yes, it was indeed a challenge. And I'm very glad that I made it through. And I'm very glad that the judges and the panel were able actually to detect compliance with the standards and judging criteria, even though it's not through a normal setup. So that shows the competence and the capability of the whole system, actually.
We're glad to.
Now, Muhammad, you are no stranger to presenting, of course, and we had you on the show back in 2017 before your educational session at the International Convention in Vancouver. And of course, you're also known as someone who has competed in the World Championship of Public Speaking. What I want to ask you is, what motivated you to switch over to pursuing the accredited speaker designation?
There were several motives. It's not one in particular, but as I started with this spark from a friend of mine, and they said back in 2015, Muhammad, you're already doing professional speaking and, you know, for health and safety mainly. And why don't you think, you know, you're eligible to actually apply for the accredited speaker in Toastmasters? And I'm like, wow, what's that going to get me? And of course, like anyone will think of the extra two letters in my profile, in LinkedIn profile. I thought of the probably extra attention, recognition, certification. Actually, I just went there because I thought it's a good idea. And then as I read about accredited speakers and what they experience in their journeys, I was inspired to go through it. I mean, these giants already have been speaking for decades, and yet they were humbled to say that this experience has changed my life. Come on, you're already a well-known speaker, you're a household already, and yet you see in a great speaker something that can alleviate you. And it did actually, it did challenge me. It was a competition, but with myself, with my current status, with my current achievements, it took me to a different level of competition. And that's what makes it really distinguished from the normal competition. I wouldn't say it's normal. No competition is normal, but it was with competing with others, and you have to beat others to win. But this time you have to beat the comfort zone and the complacence that you are in. That's what made it unique.
Yeah, it's like you're competing against yourself as opposed to competing against other people here. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, you know, we often hear people say, if you want to be a better speaker, participate in the international speech contest. But I'd like to know, what did you discover on your accredited speaker journey that you hadn't already learned while competing in international speech contests? How has this journey made you a more powerful speaker when you step on stage?
I'm glad you brought the both aspects, because here's what I do to my members or people who I guide and lead in Toastmasters. I tell them, get out of your comfort zone and compete. The club contests are coming, so you might as well need to test your abilities. Why do I do that? Because I want them to come into terms with their, let us say, not weaknesses, but the challenges that they face they wouldn't otherwise in the normal projects that they do in the club. But there's another dimension that I am also advocating. Now, you Toastmasters, enough of only speaking inside your clubs, get out of your clubs and spread the word outside. That's another level of pushing your limits. And to me, when I did that myself, before I go to accredited speaker, I saw a whole new world. The bigger world actually challenges you in a unique way and demands of you in a very precise way and not apologetic way that you need to be really good in order to be rehired and paid. Payment is not just a reward, but it's also a way to measure how good you are. So one thing I learned is that each one of us has a profession, whether it was formal or not. You know something in your life. You are good at something. Now speak it up, not only in the club, but go and give and help your society, your community with what you know. An accredited speaker was the wake-up call, not only for me, but those who were inspired, especially as I was the first in the Middle East. Professional speaking is speaking about your profession, period. Do that and you will discover that actually you are accredited, whether given the title or not.
Wow. Now, Mohammed, your journey didn't happen overnight. It took 5 years, if I understand correctly. What were some of the bumps along the road that perhaps you encountered?
I'm glad that those bumps, actually, I walked over them and I became better, but they were painful in their terms. I remember when I wanted to deliver my first video, I was happy. I did the keynote for a conference in management, 170 attendees. And guess what? The video didn't measure up to the standards for the first qualification round. And, you know, there was editing in the video and there was background music, something like that. And then next year I prepare a good videographer and then I go over time with 2 to 3 minutes and it's not accepted and I have to wait for another. So precision comes to me as the first word. You need to be precise. If you went over the time and for 5 minutes in the normal setup, in a keynote or anywhere, any corporate talk, okay, maybe that's pardoned, or maybe they'll delay the buffet a little bit later because of you going over time, but not an accredited speaker. It's not accepted. And I'm glad, you know, in that toughness, because it makes you tough, really. When the going gets tough, the tough gets going.
Precision, that's an interesting word, and that's so important in your work. So perhaps, I know you mentioned it a couple times, you mentioned safety. What exactly do you do?
Workplaces, actually everywhere, they are full of workforce, of course, you know, basically, and they need to do the job, which is basically business. You know, a business is about money, whether it's in industry, factories, or any type of industry. But the people who work actually need to be safe while doing that. They need to go back to their families safe and healthy, and not incur accidents because or in the course of their work. And it is the job of the safety professionals to help, guide, educate, motivate, and train the employees to actually stay safe. And that is, it's difficult because many people, if you go into the realm of safety, occupational health and safety management, many people, workforce, and sometimes even the business owners themselves, they see us as an impediment, as an obstacle to production. The famous argument is safety versus production, where in fact it is safety plus production. They go in line together. But if I go there and I tell them, hey, wear your helmet. Hey, where's your glove? Where are your gloves? And they're like, oh my God, safety guys again. Resistance to safety created my communication to those people actually was not pleasant. They didn't see us as pleasant people or welcome individuals. So we had to incorporate and equip ourselves with huge machinery of communication and convincing, because we want people to be committed, not only comply. We want them to do what they have to do, not because they have to do, but because they want to do. And guess what? Because I was a Toastmaster in 2004, then a finalist in 2006, I was able to craft my messages and my speeches and lectures and become unique in delivering my... It's a boring subject, to be honest. And yet, if you can make it really lively and engaging, that's the challenge. And that's what I think I added. And guess what? My presentation in the second round of Accredited Speaker was about health and safety. And yet the judges saw that it was very entertaining and engaging and educating in the meantime.
Mohammed, this is a perfect segue into your presentation, just giving us a little bit of a taste for it, because I'm thinking about the presentation. I'm thinking about sort of the message that you had. In your presentation, you talk about the shortcut to safety. And I'm thinking shortcut and safety, those are sort of an oxymoron. Shortcuts always sound good, try to get something done quicker. But when it comes to safety, it sounds dangerous. So perhaps give us a little insight into your presentation. And what do you mean by shortcut to safety?
Of course, you're right. Exactly. Because shortcuts are something that we don't want at work, and yet it is done, especially when the safety guys are not there, the management is not there. Let me do my job in a faster way, quicker way, so that I get the immediate rewards. The immediate rewards is recognition, doing faster work, my peers looking at me and my superiors looking at me with admiration. Oh, you finished the job in half of the time. So we call this in safety the immediate rewards versus the uncertain remote rewards, which is not getting an accident. Okay, people don't see that. It's like smoking. You get an instant pleasure, instant gratification, but not getting a lung cancer, that is something remote and it's not certain. So how to balance that, how to bring to the forefront of the people the importance of not taking shortcuts. And I actually did this in a project, 18 months project in my company, helping people to not commit shortcuts, but using methodologies that are considered shortcuts when compared to the conventional way of teaching and promoting safety. The conventional way is a lot of talking, it's a lot of training, it's a lot of posters, all the classic way. But I did it in an unclassic way with the management, and I saw tremendous results. I saw people actually achieving better results in shorter time, and that's why I called it a shortcut to safety culture, where we overcome shortcuts by using a shortcut in management. I know it sounds like a riddle anyway, but there you go.
It's certainly an attention grabber because safety is a huge thing. And as soon as I saw that, I'm going, okay, there's got to be a twist here.
What I love about not only your presentation, but about the safety programs that you shepherd with your clients is that instead of just preaching safety and putting up safety posters, you're really getting the organization, the individuals, the frontline workers, and everyone all the way up the chain involved in the process and producing data that is then used to establish safety protocols and policies even. Do you want to maybe just peel back just a layer deeper and give our audience a little bit of a peek into what that looks like?
Ryan, I mean, I like the last thing you said, policies. You know, what are we famous for? Unfortunately, the prejudice that people have about us, the safety professionals and practitioners, although we actually learn safety, it's a very broad subject. It encompasses so many other skills and knowledges and sciences, by the way. So there is the chemical safety, there is the electrical safety, and there are so the whole nine yards. And it's so broad, but we are regarded as police. I hate to say that in many ways because of the wrong way some of the safety practitioners have to or were taught to implement and enforce safety. Enforcement, yeah. That's the word, enforcement.
Compliance.
Compliance. So we have been policing our ways to policies, okay? And that's what we, in our culture, in my company, we made a full revamp and we had reinvention of the way we look at culture. And that's what we did. So we gave actually the steering wheel to the workforce. They are used to us coming and preaching them and policing them and whatever you call it. We talk, they listen, they say, yes, sir, we go, but they do not comply. It doesn't work that way. We went into this program and we gave them actually the steering wheel and I exchanged position with them and I said to them, hey, I'm listening. You tell me what's wrong. And it took time, trust building, etc. And I used my Toastmasters skill, by the way, full throttle and listening intentively and motivating them. And then suddenly they became the preachers. They became the teachers. And I was actually taking notes. I'm the secretary. And I'm the clerk writing down what they say. And that image really stuck with them. They wanted me to be there more often. So I took all the data from them and we created policies by them. So we reversed everything. We let them create the policies so they had ownership. And they when you have an ownership of your idea, you will be the most enthusiastic to implement it. You don't need someone to remind you or penalize you if you don't apply it. It's your baby. So we gave them the safety to them. We told them, you run it. We just came, watched them, gave them monitoring. We showed them graphs. We did this on their behalf. And they were the bosses. We were the followers. And everybody was safe. And that's what's important. Everybody was safe. We wanted that to happen. It happened.
That's amazing. I mean, it's human nature, right? People hate rules. But yet, if you convince them or if they think it's their idea, in which case it is their idea, then chances are they're going to do it. I have a younger brother who's 3 years younger. When we were smaller, there were things that he didn't want to do, but if he thought it was his idea, he would go along with that.
Exactly.
Hopefully people will be able to do that when it comes to this social distancing. Mohammed, I want to ask you if you could just share a little small clip perhaps of your presentation and maybe just share a little bit, sort of the Coles Notes version of the safety glasses.
Oh, all right. That's my favorite part, actually. This is where I go into dialogue. The thing we do at the beginning is we go into each section of the department and I close the door behind me and I say, hey, guys, no supervisors, no managers. It's just me and you. Okay, we know you. You're from the safety department, so they are skeptical. But actually, we gave the way we do all the homework and until they become feel secure. So I tell them the big question, what are the shortcuts you commit? And they are like, oh my God. I mean, the eyebrows go up. Nobody wants to answer. We don't take shortcuts. Hey, don't look at me. I don't take shortcuts. It's not good. I mean, I'm the one who hunts for shortcuts before, and now I'm asking them, you know, like interrogation? No way. Until someone, I reassure them fully, no names taken, nothing, until one person is enough to spit it out, and they usually pick the very easy one, the something that is already famous. Okay, Mr. Muhammad, I think we don't wear safety glasses all the time. Okay, good, thank you. Is that it? Okay, good, I'm happy, no problem. So they choose a shortcut, which is safe. I mean, safe in terms of not being very risky, you know, in their point of view. And I just work with them on that one little habit. Okay, let's pick that one habit. Let's try to fix it. You tell me, what is the safe way of doing it? And then they gave me what is the safe way of doing it. And suddenly, they are feeling confident. Oh, we are teaching Mr. Muhammad. Oh, that's cool. I am teaching him what's happening. So they feel confident. And I agree with every policy that they give. And I say, okay, just try to be compliant as much as possible. We use some metrics. And then we show them the graph. What they don't see, they see the graph. They see themselves growing 5% every week. But what they don't see is that they are growing on the other levels of attitude, the teamwork, caring for each other. The next week, if John sees David not wearing safety glasses, hey, David, where are your safety glasses? Hey, put them on, man. You know, we are going to be, you know, we will be on the graph next week with Mr. Muhammad. Hey, put it on. You don't want to damage our score. And suddenly they didn't used to do this before. Another aspect is growing, which is culture. So it's not about the masks right now. It's really not about social distancing. But what happens beneath the surface? The people taking care of each other. When you go into a shop now and you see a parent, which I do, by the way, a parent putting his mask, but his kid is not putting on his mask. He's taking it for granted. And I'm saying, sir, your daughter, your son is not putting mask. That is not good. I mean, we didn't used to do this. There's a BBC study that says, yes, the pandemic has done a lot of damage, but it also brought to the surface caring about each other. Beneath the surface is what we call the culture and the attitudes and the values. And the workforce, they think they are only growing on the safety glasses level. If I use the metaphor of eye and eyeglasses, that's an eye-opening.
Interesting, the timing of your presentation. I'm sure you didn't take that into account. The timing is just absolutely impeccable. And of course, folks, you need to listen, you need to watch the entire presentation. And we will, of course, put a link to the presentation so that you can watch the entire 20 minutes.
Mohammed, as we wind down here, it occurs to me that you've, of course, learned so much through this journey. And of course, in the topic of safety, you're already an expert there as well. That goes without saying. I think if we could leave something with our listeners, whether they're interested in pursuing the accredited speaker designation or not, I think what I'd like to have you comment upon, in your article, it suggests that even if Toastmasters aren't interested in going after that designation, they can still benefit from emulating the accredited speaker program's rigors. And I wonder if you could just give us some practical suggestions, just a simple game plan. If someone's like, all right, I'm not going to go after their designation, but I'd really like to see how I can use the model of the program to improve my speaking ability. What would it look like to go about doing that?
I mean, your question was also the answer, because they need what they need to do is just go pursue themselves as accredited speakers, professional speakers, even if they do not actually apply and for the title. So here's what happened to me in one of the exchanges. I was meeting some professionals, all of them are DTMs, and telling them about this. And suddenly a doctor unmuted and said, Mr. Muhammad, I actually do not know what to talk about. I don't have anything to share with people. I said, how many years are you in medicine, doctor? He says, 30 years. And I'm like, okay, so what did you learn in these 30 years? Did your profession teach you anything? He said, yes. It taught me a lot of things. I said, just share one. He said, one day a patient came, we didn't know what to do, blah, blah, blah. And then he told the whole story and how they brought that patient to a healing by following a different approach. And he told me the whole story. And right in front of all 50 attendees, I told him, sir, doctor, you have just delivered your professional talk. All you need to do is polish it. And everybody gave him a big hand. And that's what's happening in all professions. People are immersed in water like fish in the ocean, who fish don't know that they are around, surrounded by water, and until they are removed. Everybody knows something very well, to the degree that they forgot that they do. I remind them that each one of you has a lot to share. Just share it with the people. You don't have to go and become a motivational speaker. Everybody wants to emulate the Tony Robbins or Les Brown or become some emotionally inspirational speaker. You can be in your own neck, in your own line, someone inspirational. I mean, look at me. Safety, I mean, usually it's not the most pleasant conference to attend, and yet it got me the title, if I work on my passion and what I know very well, and then turn it with the help of accredited speaker, because accredited speaker is not only a competition, but it's also a manual and a guideline and a handbook is there already. And so you just follow that and make your profession something that pays, your passion and profession something that pays.
That makes a lot of sense. In fact, I belong to an advanced club called GoPro Speakers. And our goal in our club is to help people become accredited speakers or help pursue professional speaking. And one of the things that we do is we use the accredited speaker forms. Those are all available, and we will share a link in the show notes as well. But for example, when someone does their icebreaker, is one of the first speeches that they will do in the club, is we will use the accredited speaker guidelines to be able to gauge where that individual currently sits in terms of their journey.
Wow.
Mohammed, this has been absolutely delightful. Congratulations on achieving your accredited speaker designation. We will certainly put some information in the show notes for everyone to be able to find you and to find the accredited speaker information. Perhaps you can leave us with how people can find you if they're looking to get in touch with you or to hear more about your journey.
Thank you. I'm very glad, and thank you for having me. My profile is available on the Toastmasters.org website, and how to reach me through my email. That's more than enough. And I have my social media accounts and my website to be launched in January, www.mohammedalishukri.com. That also will be, in the 2021 January edition of Toastmasters magazine, it will be posted as well.
Fantastic, Mohammed. Thanks so much for joining us today. A real pleasure.
My pleasure. You guys managed to make it both from my perspective, you allowed me to freely see it from my binoculars, but also you gave me a space to also share knowledge. It really appears your professionality. I was very happy that I could share both my personal and professional views. Thank you very much.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.